Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri, and good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, May 12th, 2016. I'd like to thank you for joining us this evening live from Washington. I am Dimyake Mwakalyelye. Here are our top stories this evening. The MDCT resolves to take the central bank to court over its plans to introduce bond notes.
We are going to take this matter up with the court to have that action of printing bond notes declared unconstitutional.
But Central Bank Chief John Magunjiga claims that he is still consulting stakeholders on this issue.
Right now we are all engaging. I don't want to be people about emotional about this thing. Let's calm down. Let's continue engaging. We are benefiting from the dialogue. Let's continue talking.
And the United States explores ways of working with Zimbabwe in tackling human trafficking. Meanwhile, also business groups launch a report blasting corruption in Zimbabwe, and Dynamos sacks its coach George Paulo Silva. So many stories coming up. Stay tuned. Former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's MDC party has resolved to take the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe to court over its plans to introduce bond notes, saying such a move is unconstitutional. Our reporter Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Members of the MDCT National Executive Committee met at the main opposition party Service House headquarters today to discuss the country's liquidity crunch and proposals by the central bank to introduce bond notes in the financial market. MDCT spokesperson Obed Gutu says his party resolved to take the central bank to the constitutional court, arguing that its plan to print bond notes is outside its mandate outlined in the constitution.
All the executive members, the national executive members of the MDC, were unanimous in condemning this particular illegal action. I call it illegal because if you look closely at Section 317 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe, it gives the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe the authority to print an official currency for Zimbabwe. We all know that the bond notes are not an official currency for Zimbabwe, which effectively means that even at law, it is illegal, it is unconstitutional for the Reserve Bank to print a useless piece of paper. We are going to take this matter up with the court to have that action of printing bond notes declared unconstitutional by the apex court of the country, i.e. the Concord.
He says his party would also stage public protests to show its displeasure over the central bank's proposed plan.
The people are actually looking up to us to lead demonstrations, which exactly we are leading.
The central bank chief, John Magunjiga, has already indicated that fiscal authorities would want to introduce bond notes designed to give a 5% export incentive to Zimbabwean business people in an effort to curb externalization of foreign currency through a $200 million facility financed by the African Export and Import Bank. ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo refused to comment on the matter, saying he would wait for the RBZ to implement its plans and see what the MDCT would do. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, the central bank governor tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that it is still engaging stakeholders before introducing bond notes in light of criticism that its plans are unconstitutional.
The dialogue that is taking place both on social media, on newspapers and the press, it's a healthy debate. We have noticed some of the comments, the advices being given. I think the legal opinions that were given initially were based on the wrong premises, that they thought that we are introducing bond notes for catering for a shortage of cash. That's not the case. That's not the case. The bond notes, they are supporting or they are funding the export incentive or export bonus scheme that we need to introduce. We are still talking, and the illegal opinions, I think they should keep on flowing. We are learning also from them. So I think for now, you've asked a good question about legal opinions. Look, this is a democratic society, and that's why it's an opinion. And bond notes, by the way, they are not currency. Bond notes, they are coupons, they are tokens. It's a token of appreciation that are given to the exporters. As simple as that.
So these will not be given to members of the public. It's only to exporters. They won't work like the bearer checks.
No. They work like bond coins, blessing. When you go to a shop today, you are given a change in bond coins. The shop owner bangs the bond coins together with the US dollar, but they are at par. The same will be the same with the bond notes. They are at par with you. So there's only one account, which is the US dollar account, where the money will be put into. And you just withdraw it just like just the way you do with the US dollars. So the funding mechanism is not through the company. It's through the bank that comes now to us, whereby they will say, Mangunjga yesterday exported. Can we have the 5% to fund the position, the bank's position? Otherwise, the bank will be short by that 5%. So that's how the bank now have the bond notes. No, that is what we do. We give them. We don't just give them. It's only after the export, after money they received to the economy. And you might want to know, Blake, that after the tobacco producers requested that they wanted to use one account, the US dollars and the coal producers, we have since also unified everything.
And there was also concern, Dr. Mangunjga, about the loan from Afreximbank. What are the terms of that loan?
You know, Blake, what we're talking about here, it's not about all that issue. The issue is, as I said, there's a single narrative, which is about trust and confidence. All these things, that question that you are asking, it's all about, it boils down to one thing, trust and confidence. That's the only thing. Because Afreximbank Bank, as you might be aware, are the bank that has been assisting this economy since 1997, and also PTA Bank. Those two banks, without those two banks, this kind would have gotten credit throughout the whole world. That is known. Therefore, to start today questioning the terms of a facility, you know, it's a bit queer.
And another issue that the legal experts were raising was that there must be an expiry date on the bond notes.
That we agree. That's standard, my brother. We have never. How can they give a legal opinion before it is a blessing? That we agree. We have heard what they said, and we agree 100%.
So you are still pushing for them to be unveiled in 2 months?
Listen, I said right now we are all engaging. I don't want to be people about emotional about these things. Let's calm down. Let's continue engaging.
That was Central Bank Governor John Mangunjga speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. The RBZ governor will be focusing on leaked Panama Papers tomorrow, showing that some business executives, including Zimbabweans, are stashing millions of dollars in offshore accounts in various countries. So don't miss it. Make sure you tune in tomorrow. United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Harry Thomas Jr. says America is looking at ways of working with the Zimbabwean government to end human trafficking. Our correspondent in Harare, Ivan Chifera, reports from the capital.
In a breakfast meeting with the journalists in Harare today, Ambassador Thomas Jr. said stories of the 32 Zimbabwean women who recently returned from Kuwait had brought to the fore dangers of human trafficking, which has now become a global problem.
We would like to find ways to work with the government on human trafficking. I'm sure you all understand that this is modern-day slavery, that people are trafficked for labor as well as sex.
Zimbabweans desperate to eke out a living have been taken advantage of by human traffickers who recruit and market them abroad. Home Affairs Minister Ignatius Chombo told a press conference in Harare that the Zimbabwe government was committed to ending human trafficking.
The government of Zimbabwe, through the Minister of Home Affairs, is committed to fight human trafficking and to ensure that victims of trafficking are protected and reintegrated into the society via the right channels.
After failing to raise airfares for all the 32 women from Kuwait early this month, Chombo said government now has resources to bring home all victims of human trafficking who are in Kuwait. He said so far 70 women have been brought back home from Kuwait, while 16 others are now living at the Zimbabwean embassy in Kuwait waiting for air tickets. At the same time, Ambassador Thomas Jr. also urged the government to find human rights activist Itai Dzamara.
I think Itai Dzamara needs to be found, needs to be released. If the government or someone wants to charge him, they charge him.
Ambassador Thomas Jr., who has been in the country for a few months now, said he has already met with leaders of many political parties, including ZANU-PF, Movement for Democratic Change Formations, Zimbabwe People First, and People's Democratic Party. He said the United States would work with civil society to advance human rights, governance, and media freedom, among other issues. Ambassador Thomas Jr. further noted that they are currently reviewing civil society organizations to identify the most appropriate one to work with. The U.S., he said, was keen to see the full implementation of Zimbabwe's constitution adopted in 2013. On targeted sanctions, Ambassador Thomas Jr. said individuals affected by the restrictive measures were free to apply for their removal. The sanctions were imposed on President Mugabe and his inner circle for alleged human rights violations, election rigging. He said the U.S. supports economic reform in Zimbabwe, but it's entirely the responsibility of the government to create conducive environment for economic prosperity through clarity on policies such as the indigenization law. The U.S. government is the leading donor in Zimbabwe as it is providing millions of dollars in aid annually to alleviate hunger, tackle HIV, as well as funding education and exchange programs for local people. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Meanwhile, women parliamentarians from all political parties today staged a protest in the House of Assembly, displaying discontent over the human rights over the human trafficking issue. Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye speaks with parliamentarian Priscilla Misihai Rambwe Mushonga.
We have just had a debate right now in Parliament, and I'm quite excited that for the first time I invited my sisters to join me in a demonstration in the House. Basically, after I had made the presentation, I invited my sisters to join me on sitting down on the floor to be able to express that we have not been treated fairly. And that pretending to sit on the chairs and pretending to be treated like equal people who make equal representation is basically a myth and a lie. And that until the Minister of Foreign Affairs, in particular over this issue of Kuwait, addresses the issues that we have raised, we will continue to sit on the floor. So I'm happy that my sisters joined me. I actually don't mind even if they don't continue sitting. But today, the fact that across party lines, women just left their chairs and sat on the floor of Parliament, for me, is a big demonstration of how serious this thing is being taken.
That was parliamentarian Priscilla Misihai Rambwe Mushonga speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye from Harare. The Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce and the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries today launched a report blasting the extent of corruption in the country. Studio 7's reporter Ntungamile Nkomo has more.
The report by the two groupings indicates that corruption has contaminated all facets of life in Zimbabwe and calls on government to take tough measures against offenders. In recent memory, the most prominent case of corruption in Zimbabwe is the disappearance of over $15 billion in diamond revenue, and no one has been brought to book. Economic commentator Rejoice Ngwenya, who attended the report launch at a breakfast meeting in Harare, says eradicating graft has become almost impossible.
There is absolutely no way that it can be eradicated until the executive itself takes charge to ensure that the anti-corruption is given the necessary policing and prosecutorial powers to deal with the culprits.
Mr. Mugabe is on record denouncing corruption even among his government peers. But Mr. Ngwenya says talk without action is not enough.
He has no political will, and I think he is the cause of the problem because he has not even effected the arrest of a single person. So he is complicit to this issue of corruption.
Cases of high-level corruption have dominated news headlines recently, with the latest being the suspension of Zimbabwe Revenue Authority boss Geshe Mpasi and five other executives over allegations of graft involving the importation of vehicles. And now the tax collector has embarked on an anti-corruption campaign, taking out graphic advertisements in the press and also posting them on Twitter. But the campaign has not been without controversy. One advert features a bloodied and agonizing woman with a knife to her throat. The message says, "With every bribe, you are committing murder." Transparency International Zimbabwe and women's rights activists have called the commercial insensitive as it exploits the issue of domestic violence. Lofty Dube is the Transparency International Zimbabwe board chairman.
It is insensitive. It does not send the correct message. Because what you now see is an image of horror. There could have been any other picture to use. The message of corruption is lost. Zimra lost it in that case.
Mr. Dube's sentiments were echoed by activist Linda Mpofu.
Why use that picture? I really don't get it. Why didn't they use a man? Okay, fine, a man. Why did they use a man? I think there's something wrong with their marketing, or is it their marketing department or their information people? Honestly, it's in bad taste.
Meanwhile, the British Embassy in Harare today hosted an anti-corruption symposium where speakers expressed concern at the government's ineffectiveness in tackling graft. The symposium coincided with an international anti-corruption summit being hosted in London today by British Prime Minister David Cameron. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, I'm Tungameli Nkomo.
Coming up, a closer look at the impact of politics on Zimbabwe's economy and so much more. Stay tuned. First, a look at regional and international news. The presumptive U.S. Republican presidential nominee, real estate mogul Donald Trump, met today with the party's top elected official, House of Representatives Speaker Paul Ryan, to air their differences after the lawmaker balked at the endorsing Trump's maverick candidacy. And in Uganda, longtime President Yoweri Museveni took his fifth oath of office today. The celebrations took place against a backdrop of tension. The government cut all social media ahead of the inauguration, and the opposition continues to contest the results of the February 18th poll. In Kampala, his top rival and opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, held an alternate inauguration proclaiming that he is the people's president, and that was before he was arrested. Has been said about the proposed introduction of bond notes in Zimbabwe, with some critics saying that this is set to cripple the economy. Central Bank Governor Dr. John Magunjiga has been a bit hazy on the issue, with indications that he is backtracking on some of the intended functions of the bond notes. He says that they are not supposed to ease cash shortages, but to promote exports in an underperforming economy. Despite some of the contradictions that have emerged over the bond notes, politics remains key in the implementation of monetary policies in most countries, save for a few where central banks are independent. What is the impact of politics in economic activities in countries like Zimbabwe? Is it possible to remove politicians from the economic equation or use them to fix the underlying economic problems? For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube reached ZANU-PF UK chairperson Nick Mangwana and economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe. Mangwana tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that the central bank depends on politicians in crafting and implementing monetary policies.
The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe is a national institution, so which is under the Minister of Finance, which is a Kwango under the Minister of Finance. So it has to account to Parliament, which is why he had to come to Parliament. And the idea of avoiding the involvement of politicians as in the minister was actually attempted, because that's the reason why the minister didn't present this particular monetary policy or effort to Parliament, but the governor himself. So I'm saying that was an effort to remove the politics out of it and just focus on the policy itself.
Mr. Chitambara, can you chip in there? Mr. Chitambara, what's your view on, you know, having politicians, you know, running the economy instead of maybe the RBZ governor? Is it possible really to actually get rid of politicians in the economic equation?
No. You can't get rid of politicians in the economic equation because what politicians then do is to provide what we call a vision. They are actually supposed to enunciate the vision. Then the technical guys are the ones that now run with the vision. They implement the vision. So we need the politicians to guide us in terms of the direction, in terms of the vision. Then we, the technical people, would then run with that vision and implement the vision. So you can't really separate the two. The politicians are there to provide a framework in which the technical people can then implement strategies to actualize the vision that would have been defined by the politicians.
So now, Mr. Mangwana, do you see any role that ZANU-PF is playing right now in terms of printing these bond notes?
Of course not. ZANU-PF has no role whatsoever. The basic issue is ZANU-PF deployed people as in the minister, the people running or charting the vision, to quote Mr. Chitambala's phrase there. So it's not ZANU-PF involvement involved in any of this, except that the ministers political party ZANU-PF. That's all.
And Mr. Chitambala, let's look at the international kind of scenario. What happens really? Are they autonomous
with treasury? Well, there are a number of systems really. In some countries, they have actually quite independent central banks, and that of course they ultimately they report to the treasury. But I think what most developed countries have done is to ensure that there's greater levels of autonomy, so that actually central banks can actually come up with policies. Obviously, those policies they have to complement the fiscal policies that are announced by the treasury. But in most countries, actually, there is some degrees of autonomy in terms of how central banks actually work, how they actually come up with their policies, which policies will need to complement the overall developmental thrust and macroeconomic thrust of the government.
And Mr. Mangwana, do you see any kind of, let's say, you know, an autonomous central bank in Zimbabwe?
It is possible. I've already called the central bank a kwango, meaning a quasi non-governmental organization in that regard, but it is a governmental organization. The central bank is so focused on the monetary policy, and obviously the government, or the Minister of Finance, which is the exchequer, on the fiscal policy. The two cannot be separate because they have to complement another. One has to feed into the other. But still, having said that, in Zimbabwe's case, where we don't actually have our own money, there is no way you can simply say have an autonomous central bank that does its own thing. Even in here in England, the Bank of England still has to feed into the policy that Mr. Osborne come up with. So there is no way it can be completely out there and does its own thing when the government's vision is there doing its own thing. The central bank, yes, is advisory to the Minister of Finance in that regard. So that's exactly what exactly the same role Mr. Mangunga plays with Mr. Chinamasa.
So now with politicians, Mr. Chitambara, playing that kind of key role, so at the end of the day, how can you fix the Zimbabwe economy? People always say, you know, the ruling party is dabbling into wrong things, like, you know, looking after the economy and all those kind of things. How do you fix it?
How do you fix the economy? I think what we need to do, obviously, we need to have an institutionalized framework for social dialogue. I think when you look at countries that have gone through challenges that Zimbabwe is going through, countries like Singapore, countries like Ireland, I think one thing that really stands out is the ability of the politicians to bring together on board the various social partners into what we call a social contract. So I think what Zimbabwe needs right now is a social contract that brings together government, business, labor, and the communities to actually reach a consensus on what needs to be done to address the key binding constraints that are militating against the efforts of government to achieve sustainable humane development. So I think for me, we need to go that route of having a social contract where we bring together on board all those stakeholders so that they are not working at cross purposes against each other, but they're actually working in unison.
That was economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe. You also heard from Nick Mangwana, ZANU-PF UK chairperson. Both spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. A recent survey conducted by the Zimbabwe National Statistics Agency indicates that three quarters of Zimbabweans are poor, with Matabeleland North having the largest number of people gripped by poverty. Our correspondent Taurai Shava gives us more.
The statistics were revealed at a meeting in Mlayo to discuss an interim poverty reduction strategy paper being drafted by various stakeholders. Out of the country's 10 provinces, the figures show that in Matabeleland North, 80% of the population is generally poor, while 40% is living in abject poverty, with general household poverty at nearly 71% and extreme poverty at about 19%, Matabeleland South is ranked third, while the Bulawayo Metropolitan Province has the least percentages for both general and extreme poverty levels countrywide. National Coordinator of the Poverty Reduction Initiative, Jasmine Chipika, said although the numbers of households as well as individuals in general and extreme poverty have been lessening over the years, most Zimbabweans remain poor. She attributed the trend mainly to the continued existence of an economy characterized by duality, in which a small formalized segment coexists with a highly marginalized and largely poor rural sector.
We also note that while poverty can be structural, there is also a version of it which is caused by our own policy making. If you put certain policies in place in a country, and they don't work, even people who are not poor can actually fall into poverty.
The study also states that employment in the country's formal sector has drastically dwindled due to company closures and downsizing owing to economic decline, which in turn has compelled workers to join the informal sector.
So we need to resolve the nature and quality of employment in the country.
Western Region Chairperson Rizin Ngwenya of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions says the economic situation in Zimbabwe has resulted in few individuals getting rich while the majority remains poor.
In Zimbabwe today, there are the extremely rich people who are about 10% or less, and the extremely poor people who are 90%.
The leader of Women of Zimbabwe Arise, Jenny Williams, who also attended the meeting, said some of the country's economic problems can be blamed on poor governance. The program is said to be part of a raft of measures agreed to between Zimbabwe and multilateral finance institutions and aimed at helping revive the economy. The interim poverty reduction program is supposed to start from this year until 2018, when a 5-year program is expected to be put in place. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
In sports, this happened just this afternoon. Dynamo's football club has fired its coach, George Paulo Silva, claiming that he was underperforming. Let's hear what coach Kenny Mubaiwa tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye about this.
We had a meeting with the coach this afternoon around 4 p.m. where we decided to terminate his contract.
By terminating his contract, is Dynamo's not liable to pay him off for the remainder of his contract?
According to the contract, there is no clause that says we'll pay him if we terminate his contract.
So for now, who's going to be heading your team?
Lloyd Mtasa is going to be the acting head coach until we find a substantive coach.
And most people have asked that, why did you look outside of Zimbabwe when you have competent people within Zimbabwe?
How many coaches do we have here in Zimbabwe? Which coaches are they talking about? Because we've tried and tested them, and no one can come up and say, why didn't they appoint so-and-so as a coach? Who is he that we can appoint today? Looking at the current coaches that we have here, some of them are employed with other clubs, and those who are not employed cannot qualify to coach Dynamo. So we cannot just appoint a coach because he's a coach, no.
That was Dynamo's chairman, Kenny Mubaiwa, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye from Harare. And we are going to wrap up with just a reminder to stay tuned in for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m., where our hosts of the Women's Roundtable, Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye and Praxedes Jeremiah, will be talking with listeners and experts about human trafficking that has been taking place in Zimbabwe, as we've been reporting in Kuwait. So please join the discussion by calling us on 001-202-619-2077. That number again, 001-202-619-2077. Or you can also send us a message on our WhatsApp number, 001-202-619-2077. 0012-465-0318. That's 0012-465-0318. We'll also be streaming live on Facebook, so tune in and also share your comments. That's our show this evening. One quick recap: the MDC resolves to take the central bank to court over its planned introduction of bond notes. Leaving you now with Stanley Kilem Tlanga. This is Ndimiyake Mwakalyelye in Washington saying good night.